This is URN.
The Silver Soundtrack Breakdown.
So we've been looking at the Godfather theme, obviously one of the greatest films ever made, and followed up with a very impressive sequel and a not very impressive third installment in the act. The cast is absolutely amazing as well. Of course, Marlon Brando plays the part of the Godfather in the first one. Al Pacino plays his middle son Michael. Then in the second one, Al Pacino returns, but this time he's coupled with Robert De Niro, who plays a young version of Marlon Brando's character, and it's a really good film. And obviously we've just played the love theme from The Godfather, which was scored by Nino Rota. And there's something very interesting about this, actually. The Godfather score is timeless. Everyone knows it. It's without a doubt some of the best music that that accompanies film. Really gives that Italian-American dirty mafia vibe, which really adds a lot into scenes with where it's a lot of discussion between the Godfather and other such things that don't necessarily rely on the dialogue to put across the sort of shady dealings between the family. Nina Rota's score for The Godfather was nominated for Best Original or Best Motion Picture Score at the Oscars, but then it was withdrawn because it came about that The Godfather's love theme is actually been used before by Nina Rota. Basically, the love theme in The Godfather is very slow. It's a very beautiful piece of music. It's been used before in the film Fortunella, which was made in 1958 and was scored by Nina Rota. This is basically, it used the same love theme, but it was a lot faster paced. It worked with the Italian comedy that Fortunella actually had. And then for The Godfather, he slowed down the same love score and put instead, a very, romantic sort of vibe to it, which is a nice contrast, actually, from the Fortunella piece. If you listen to two both back-to-back, it's very interesting how just a change in tempo can really add a lot to a piece of music and change the feeling of it altogether. But anyway, I get back to my point. So the reason that The Godfather was nominated and then it was taken off the sort of Academy Award ballot paper was because the love theme had been used before in Fortunella, so it wasn't allowed. But then the weirdest thing was, in The Godfather 2, the love theme reappeared again with Nino Rota doing the score, but it was nominated for an Oscar, and it actually won the Oscar for Best Musical Score in Motion Picture. So it just shows the backwardness of the Academy, that they can take it out for 1 year because of this particular song being included, and it's included in the next one and not at all. But very interesting, and I really suggest listening to the Fortunella score and then the love theme from The Godfather back to back, just to get an idea of the change between them. So, unfortunately, over the summer, the famous director Wes Craven died at the ripe old age of 76. If you don't know Wes Craven as a director, you probably know his films, including Scream, The Last House on the Left, A Nightmare on Elm Street is probably the most famous one as well. He wrote The Hills Have Eyes, and it's a real shame to lose him. One of the best tributes is the fact that Wes Craven changed his mind what horror should be three times throughout his career, and you can just see how much of a figure he was in the field. How there were so many bad knockoffs of Wes Craven films out there. For example, like The Last House on the Left, when it was released, it was the same time the world had just experienced the Manson murders, they'd experienced Vietnam, they'd experienced Nixon. It just hit the right spots, and it was made for less than $100,000, which just makes it absolutely ridiculous how it's done. And as I said, like with the fact that Wes Craven influences everything, without The Last House on the Left, there wouldn't have been a Texas Chainsaw Massacre at all. And then, of course, you have the Nightmare on Elm Street, definitive horror of the 1980s. It made its budget back 20 times over as well. And, of course, transformed Krueger into a global icon, spoofed so many times in cartoons. In fact, it's quite funny. As I said earlier, the imitations come out afterwards. This time it was the terribly made sequels that Craven is a big loss, the film community and the horror community as well. And it's really worth watching his films, especially the three that I said, The Last House on the Left, The Nightmare on Elm Street, and Scream, and the three times that he redefined horror. So we're getting into Oscar season now, which of course is the sort of time pretty much when school resumes and people start going to university again. Summer's ended. That's when all of the films which are gunning for Oscars really get released in order to be fresh in the Academy mindset for the Oscars in February. And I always find that Oscar season is kind of like having your birthday and Christmas in the span of a month or two, because for the rest of the year it's so parched. I mean, I'm trying to recall some good films that actually came out at the start of this year, and finding it difficult. Of course, you have the summer blockbusters, which sort of tide you over a bit. I mean, this year was the phenomenally successful Jurassic World. But before that, you don't get anything. The only one in recent memory which really made an impact was Wes Anderson's Grand Budapest Hotel, of course, which came out in March 2014 and picked up the Oscars earlier this year, almost a year later. But Oscar season's riding up, and just to give you a couple of ideas of the things we're looking at a brand new Star Wars film. We're looking at the new James Bond film, which I'll come back to in a moment. We're looking at The Martian, a new film with Matt Damon in. That's coming out. If you haven't read the book, by the way, I really recommend you do. And I'm really looking forward to seeing how all the score comes out. And even again, Ennio Morricone is making a return to scoring for Tarantino's The Hateful Eight, which of course is interesting because Morricone's been used time and time and time again in Tarantino, Kill Bill, predominantly in Django Unchained as well. But to see him return and actually make new score material for this sort of second spaghetti western or spaghetti southern, however Tarantino wants to coin it, it'll be really interesting to see what he pulls out the bag. So we're certainly excited for that. And of course, as I said, I go back to the Bond film. I'm really interested in seeing how Sam Smith's Bond song does. Of course, the last Bond song, Skyfall by Adele, won the Oscar, and it'd be very interesting to see whether it goes into the same category as well, whether it becomes sort of a thing from now on that every 3 years or so the best original song is swept up by a Bond film. That'll be interesting to see as well. I think that a strong Disney or Pixar cartoon song similar to Let It Go could probably give it a run for its money if they were both nominated, but I'm not even sure if there are any big Disney or Pixar musicals coming out in Oscar season to surmount to that. Of course, we had Inside Out over summer, which was phenomenally successful. But very interesting to see. I was kind of hoping that that Lana Del Rey would sing the new Bond song, and I said that last year. But I think Sam Smith's a very, very sound choice, and I'm really looking forward to seeing how he does.
This is URN.